Eddie, the Collegiate Junior. Chapter 1. School Starts, Part 2. Monday arrives, starting the second week of track practice. Mr. Fraser does things a little differently than the former head coach, Dr. Braun. Specifically, Mr. Fraser evaluates the athletes' skills when the athletes are well rested at the beginning of the week. Running one timed event per day is sufficient, as the start of the season is many weeks away. And the heavier workouts are scheduled toward the end of the week, when the athletes have the weekend to fully recover. Addressing the team, Mr. Fraser announces, "Today, since it is raining, we will be staying inside. For the first half of our time together today, you will be running the 60-meter dash, and you will be electronically timed. For the second half of our time together, you will be running the relay drill. On this lectern is the lineup sheet for the heats. Please check the list and make sure you are warmed up before your heat is called. Okay. Let's go." The team heads to the lectern to check which heat they are in, and those in the earlier heats begin to warm up. In the first heat are the team's star sprinters. Eddie in lane 4 and Mark in lane 5 are expected to set today's standard. Hoffer, Braden, Johnson, John, Davida, and Bull fill out the field. Those in the later heats, who are mostly freshmen, sit on the bleachers and watch. If they haven't already, they will quickly understand the level of collegiate competition. The first heat gets behind the blocks, ready to prove themselves once again. Standing at the finish line is Kathy and Paula, wondering what their guys can deliver this year. The starter announces, "On your marks." Eddie, oblivious to anything else going on around him, is about to demonstrate how this race is run. The starter announces, "Set." Knowing that, in competition, he will never be up against a faster group of men, Eddie is fired up. The buzzer sounds, and everyone is off to a great start. Quickly breaking from the pack, Eddie and Mark take the lead. Halfway through the race, Eddie is in the lead, followed by Mark. Braden, in third place, is being chased down by Johnson, Hoffer, and John. Approaching the finish line, the field of runners push themselves harder than they ever have. Crossing first is Eddie, followed by Mark, then Braden. Fourth place is a tie between Johnson and Hoffer. John finished in sixth place, followed by Bull and Davida. Looking up at the scoreboard, Eddie sees his time of 6.52 seconds, realizing that he has accomplished his goal. Equaling the world record at this distance, Eddie walks back to the finish line, knowing for sure that his new workout routine has paid off. Receiving high fives from his teammates and coaches, Eddie heads straight for Kathy. Mr. Fraser exclaims, "These guys are fast. That was a great run. This is what I expect." Kathy, knowing the world record in every track event, gives Eddie a hug, telling him, "You did it. You tied it." Overhearing Kathy's comment, Mr. Fraser, not too familiar with the 60-meter dash record, asks Kathy, "What? He tied what?" Kathy replies, "Eddie tied the world record." Mr. Fraser exclaims, "Eddie tied the record. Did everyone hear that? Eddie tied the world record in the 60-meter dash." Hearing that Eddie tied the record, Mark's time of 6.64 seconds, and Braden's time of 6.68 seconds, all of a sudden, do not look too shabby. Knowing that Eddie will be idle for a while, Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, "Run the rest of this exercise. I'll be back in a few minutes." Provost Layton, Kathy, and Paula can easily handle the time trials on their own. Mr. Fraser tells Eddie, "Follow me," as he heads to one of the offices overlooking the arena. As they take a seat in the office, Mr. Fraser tells Eddie, "That was a great run. I'm very surprised this year. You beat Braden in the 400 meter, and the relay team is looking strong. You won the mile. And now this." Eddie replies, "Thank you." Mr. Fraser asks, "Kathy mentioned you've changed the way you've been training. What have you been doing differently?" Eddie replies, I wonder what she was talking about. Mr. Fraser then mentions, during one of the practice sessions, Kathy mentioned something about a new bicycle. Eddie replies, oh, yeah. I bought a new bicycle a while ago. I rode my bicycle to work when the weather was nice. On my way home, I took the long way. Then, later in the afternoon, I trained on the track. Mr. Fraser asks, what kind of bicycle did you get? Eddie explains, it's a track frame, but it has road wheels. It has a 5-speed rear hub and brakes. I got it from Vito. When I ride, I mostly use first or fifth gear. So, I'm either pedaling really fast or really hard. If I'm going uphill, I use the high gears, which is the opposite of what you'd normally do. I rode about 20 miles a day on the days I worked. I didn't really think of riding my bicycle to work as training. If I rode my bicycle to work, it's that much less training I'd have to do later. Oh, and Karen rode her bicycle to work too, training in the same way. Eddie continues, after work, me and Kathy worked out in our gym for a while or we went for a swim. When Karen came home from work, we would ride our bicycles to the university and trained on the track. But someone would have to drive to bring the training sled. It would usually be me, since I already got 20 miles in on the bike. The three of us would train on the sand track, then run a few laps. Mark and Paula joined us a lot. Mr. Fraser asks, did Kathy do any other training? Eddie replies, yeah. When I was at work, she was always doing something, like swimming laps, or riding her bicycle. Kathy and Paula trained together over the summer, using the same biking protocol. Mr. Fraser asks, did you do anything else different? Eddie laughs and replies, yeah. I modified my running shoes. Quite surprised, Mr. Fraser asks, you modified your running shoes? Taking off one of his running shoes, Eddie explains, yeah. I cut horizontal grooves across the sole so the shoes get better traction on the track. I can actually feel the difference when I run. Mr. Fraser examines the sole of Eddie's shoe, knowing that Eddie is always looking for shortcuts to getting faster. Mr. Fraser asks, is there anything else? Eddie replies, no. That's about it. But, pretty much, I incorporated my training into my everyday life. Satisfied with the information and knowledge he gained, Mr. Fraser tells Eddie, well, let's get out there and see what everyone else did. Eddie and Mr. Fraser head back out to the arena, where they will quickly learn of a few more surprises. Mr. Fraser asks Provost Layton, so, what did I miss? Getting the run sheet from Mrs. Owens, Provost Layton explains, you're not going to believe this. Karen ran a 7.31, Erica ran a 7.42, and Tessa ran a 7.45. Kathy tells me the world record is 7.12. But, get this. Kathy got on the track with them. She ran a 7.14. Mr. Fraser replies, wow. They all must have put a lot of work in over the summer. Maybe I can go back to telling them to put one foot in front of the other faster than the other runners. Provost Layton laughs, fully catching the connotation. Looking at the run sheet, Provost Layton informs Mr. Fraser, speaking of putting one foot in front of the other, Delaney ran an 8.1, and McCutcheon ran an 8.4. Already knowing the answer, Mr. Fraser asks, what do you think we should do? Provost Layton replies, cut them. Neither of them is on scholarship. And after that alleged incident over the summer with Delaney, we just don't have the time to deal with them. Mr. Fraser agrees, telling Provost Layton, I was thinking the same thing. Mr. Fraser then asks, is there anyone else not on scholarship that we should cut? Provost Layton replies, not that I can see. The team looks pretty solid. Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, I'll get rid of them after practice today. Once the time trials are completed, the team runs the relay drill for the second hour. Mr. Fraser, working with Paula on one side of the track, and Provost Layton, working with Kathy on the other side of the track, will be watching the athletes' skill carefully. The athletes, now fully understanding that this is a highly competitive team, will be delivering the best performance they can. On the track, the relay drill goes reasonably well. The coaches catch a few athletes who need some additional work with their handoffs. They are pulled aside and given some additional instruction. McCutcheon bungles a few handoffs, but that is to be expected. The freshmen are beginning to catch on to the technique, which takes a lot of practice to perfect. But the freshmen know their efforts will pay off in the long run. Mr. Fraser blows his whistle and announces, "That was a great workout today. Tomorrow, we'll be running the 200-meter dash for time. Delaney and McCutcheon, please see me after practice." Everyone, except for Delaney and McCutcheon, hits the locker rooms, feeling very confident about both their own and the team's performance. Mr. Fraser brings Delaney into one of the offices and tells him to have a seat. Examining Delaney's performance statistics, Mr. Fraser explains, "From what we've seen over the last week, your performance on the track is not quite up to par. You ran the 400 meter in 65.3 seconds, the mile in 5:21.2, and the 60 meter dash in 8.1 seconds. Unfortunately, those times are not competitive enough to retain a position on this team, so I'm going to have to cut you. But keep up your training on your own, and feel free to try out again next year." Delaney brashly replies, "How come I made it last year, but not this year?" Mr. Fraser explains, "The bar has been raised. Your competitiveness is measured against this year's team, not last year's." While Delaney is disappointed, he understands. Not expecting this news today, Delaney hits the locker room for the last time. McCutcheon is then called into the office and told to have a seat. Mr. Fraser opens by saying, "First, I'd like to thank you for trying out for the university's track team this year. Unfortunately, in reviewing your performance statistics, the coaching staff has come to a consensus that you are not currently competitive enough for a position on the team. So, unfortunately, I'm going to have to cut you." McCutcheon yells back, "I wasn't that bad." Reviewing McCutcheon's statistics, Mr. Fraser replies, "Let's take a look at this. You ran the 400 meter in 65.8 seconds, the mile in 5:23.3, and the 60 meter dash in 8.4 seconds. Those times represent the slowest times on the team." McCutcheon yells out, "I bet this has something to do with that Mark guy. My brother told me about him." Mr. Fraser, who does not argue, tells McCutcheon, "That's enough. This has absolutely nothing to do with Mark, and everything to do with your performance on the track. Now, clean out your locker and go home." McCutcheon mutters, "This isn't the end of this," and storms out of the room. As McCutcheon enters the locker room, he hears the tribe energetically proclaiming how great the team is this year. McCutcheon hears Braden ranting that the team is going to kick ass this year. Off to the side, Mitchell, Akinmola, and Stone discuss who is the best miler this year, ignoring the fact that Eddie and Braden both beat them a few days ago. As Mark gets dressed in his work clothes, and Eddie gets dressed in his mechanics uniform, McCutcheon notes in his mind that everything his brother, Todd, told him is true. Not even bothering to take a shower, McCutcheon cleans out his locker, including his special bottle of shampoo courtesy of Mark, and goes back to his dorm. After practice, Eddie arrives at the service station, ready to begin his day. Not long after he arrives, Officer Richard Hayes drives up, walks into the service bay, yelling out, "What's up?" Eddie yells back, "What's up?" Richard replies, "It looks like we're moving." Eddie asks, "Oh, yeah. Where to?" Richard explains, "We took a look at that house over on Alicia Drive a while ago. We looked at a few others, but we kept coming back to that one. So, we signed the contract last week. Eddie gives Richard a high five, telling him, awesome. Richard elaborates, I'd like to thank you again for your stock market advice. We were able to pay cash for the house and pay off our other house too. We're going to rent it out. This way, we can live in our new house free. The rent will pay for the taxes and insurance on both places, with a lot left over. Eddie replies, that sounds awesome. And remember to sell the stocks you're holding at the right time and reinvest your money at the right time. Knowing that Eddie has been quite accurate in his financial advice, Richard tells Eddie, believe me. I won't forget. And I'm going to take some of the money I make renting out my old house and invest that too. Eddie asks, so, when are you moving? Richard replies, hopefully, in about 3 or 4 weeks. Eddie offers, let me know when you're moving. I'll get the guys together, and we can knock it out in a few hours. Richard thanks Eddie, telling him, I really appreciate that. I might just take you up on that. Movers can be on the expensive side. And those characters always end up damaging or losing something. Wondering if there is any recent news, Richard asks Eddie, is there anything new going on at the university that I should know about? Eddie replies, we just started the semester. Before I left today, Kathy told me that Mr. Fraser cut 2 guys from the team. One of them was Jeff McCrutchen. He wasn't too happy that he got cut. Richard asks, refresh my memory. Where does this Jeff McCrutchen character fit in? Eddie explains, he's a freshman and runs middle school times. He should have been cut. Actually, he shouldn't have even bothered to try out. Richard remarks, I'll make a note of it. You never know with that McCrutchen group. Richard knows, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the McCrutchen family is up to something not quite legal. Wondering what may be going on, Eddie asks, is there still gambling activity going on? Richard emphatically replies, not that I'm directly aware of. But gambling rings are like drug dealers. When you take them down, someone else moves in and takes over their territory. While we think we brought all the characters in, if anyone in the ring is still out there, they'll undoubtedly start it up again. Hearing the news, Eddie replies, I'll keep an eye out. After catching up, Eddie gets to work, and Richard hits the streets. About 2 weeks later, at practice, before the team gathers in the arena, Provost Layton meets privately with Mr. Fraser. After a short discussion of the team's performance, Provost Layton informs Mr. Fraser, George, I think we have a minor problem. Mr. Fraser asks, what's that? Provost Layton explains, 2 weeks ago, we cut Jeff McCrutchen and Harry Delaney. Well, Jeff's father, Scott McCrutchen, hired an attorney, from whom I received a piece of certified mail late yesterday. Mr. Fraser replies, oh, really? What's their problem? Provost Layton explains, they are claiming that Jeff was not afforded a reasonable chance of trying out for the team and was treated unfairly by some of the team members. Mr. Fraser thinks for a moment, recalling his days of coaching the high school team. Mr. Fraser smiles and laughs and tells Provost Layton, this is good. We can use this to our advantage. Wondering what Mr. Fraser is up to, Provost Layton asks, George, what are you thinking? Mr. Fraser replies, when I coached the high school team, there was this guy, Jimmy O'Brien, who tried out for the team for 4 years. He was never competent enough to make the team. His father, who was a teacher at the high school, complained every year that I cut him. During the time trials for the 440-yard dash, Braden would run 440 yards in the time O'Brien could run 220 yards. And Braden would run 880 yards in the time O'Brien could run 440 yards. Go ahead and invite Jeff McCrutchen, his father, and his attorney back to practice, and we'll demonstrate to them exactly why he was cut. Provost Layton replies, I like that idea. I'll send them a response and put the ball back in their court. Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, I don't know yet how I'm going to demonstrate this, but when they leave, there will be no doubt in their mind that Jeff is not skilled enough to make the team. Recalling Mr. Fraser's past dealings with Dean Grimsby, Provost Layton can't wait. Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton enter the arena, where the team is already seated. Without much ado, Mr. Fraser announces, today, we are going to hit the sand track and run the interval drill. And, remember, everyone will be running the interval drill as if you are a sprinter. Okay. Let's hit the track. As the team gets up and heads outside, Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, that was easy. Mr. Fraser replies, hopefully, getting rid of McCutcheon and his attorney will be just as easy. At the sand track, in between runs, Braden mentions to Eddie, Chief Toledo gave me a raise. He said he was really happy with my performance. Eddie asks, on the track, or in the squad car, bro? Braden laughs and replies, in the squad car. And he said he'd like to keep me on after I graduate, if I was up to it. Eddie replies, that's good news. Are you going to do it? Braden replies, I think I might. This job ain't that hard. And me and Wendy are looking for a house somewhere around here. Wendy doesn't want to leave the area. Hopefully, she'll get a job somewhere around here when she graduates. Eddie tells Braden, it looks like it's your turn, bro. Braden takes a run down the sand track, dragging the training sled. Overhearing the conversation between Eddie and Braden was Erica. Erica tells Eddie, I'm really glad Wendy and Braden are staying around after they graduate. I'd really hate for them to move away. Eddie asks, how about you guys? Erica informs Eddie, we're not going anywhere. We actually found a piece of property over there where you guys live. We really want to buy it. But Bobby is wondering if this stock market thing will keep going like it is. Eddie tells Erica, it will. And gold is going to triple by January. You guys might want to pick up some of that too. But don't wait too long. Erica asks, where do you buy gold around here? Eddie replies, at the coin store, next to the record store, near the mall. It's now Eddie's turn. Putting on the harness, Eddie takes a run down the track. After practice, Eddie meets up with Bobby B on the way to the locker room. Eddie asks, how's the field team looking this year? Bobby B explains, with Akinmola in the high jump, we're looking a lot better. But it looks like I'm going to be back on the hammer this spring. Eddie asks, why is that? Bobby B elaborates, Anthony Marianella graduated. The other guys aren't that good. So, I guess it's up to me. Eddie tells Bobby B, I hear Mark is really good at the hammer. He took care of McCutcheon's father pretty well last year. Bobby B replies, we've got to do something. The guys hit the locker room, where they convince Mark to start practicing the hammer throw. The day of Braden's interview at the campus radio station with Angela Meadows arrives. Braden has received permission from the police department to discuss the events surrounding the arrest of Dean Grimsby. But what Braden is allowed to discuss is limited, since Dean Grimsby's case has not yet gone to trial. Angela has been advised as to what she can and cannot ask Braden. And Kathy has already filled Angela in on some of the highlights of Braden's accomplishments on the track and with the police department. Walking into the campus radio station, Kathy and Braden stop to take a look at the equipment mounted in several 19-inch equipment racks behind a glass window. Braden tells Kathy, that's a lot of fancy-looking equipment. Kathy replies, that's the radio station. But the transmitter is in a different room, all by itself. Angela Meadows comes out to greet Kathy and Braden, handing Kathy a note. Kathy reads the note, which says, I have laryngitis. You'll have to do the interview today. Thanks. Kathy looks at Angela and tells her, "That's fine. I can do that." Angela escorts Kathy and Braden into the studio where the interview will take place. In the studio, Kathy takes a seat behind the mixing console. Not even remotely knowing what she is doing, Kathy adjusts the microphone, then starts turning a few dials and pushing a few buttons. Angela, seeing Kathy about to push a button labeled Air, exclaims, "No. Don't push that one." Pushing the button labeled Air will immediately put the studio on the air live. Kathy, suspecting that Angela was pulling her leg about the laryngitis, smiles and tells Angela, "Wow. That was a really fast recovery. I was wondering which one of these buttons was the magic button." Angela confesses, "Okay. You win." Kathy smiles and replies, "I always win." Angela confesses, "I've noticed." Truth be told, Kathy and Angela were waiting to see who caved first. Braden asks, "Did I miss something here?" Kathy hands Braden the note that Angela handed to her earlier and explains, "Angela handed me this note. She was messing with us." Angela is almost as good as Mark when it comes to messing with people. Kathy and Angela fill Braden in on how Angela messed with Kathy when she first visited the radio station, and how Angela tried to mess with Eddie, but Eddie won. Moving on to the interview, Angela explains to Braden that she will do a lot of talking, and that she'll ask questions. Angela also explains to Braden that, if he messes up what he is saying, to just start over, and it will be fixed later during the editing process. Braden sits across the console from Angela and is ready to go. Angela tells Braden that she will start by asking a few simple questions. Angela, who will be working the mixing board and tape machine herself, starts the tape and the interview begins. Totally unscripted, Angela begins, announcing, "Good evening again, and welcome to the program Waves, where we talk with students making waves on campus. This is Angela Meadows and today, I have the distinct pleasure and honor of having Officer Axel Braden sitting in the studio right in front of me. For those of you who do not know, Axel Braden is one of our campus police officers and is a star member of the university's track team. Officer Braden is also enrolled in the university's criminal justice program." Angela pauses for a moment to make editing easier, then continues, asking Braden, "Officer Braden, I hear that, last year, you broke the divisional record in the 440-yard dash. Am I correct in what I hear?" Braden replies, "That's right. I'm the master of the track and ready to attack. I ran the 440 in 44.91 seconds. And this year, I'm gonna break my own record." Angela was forewarned by Kathy about Braden's charismatic personality. Angela, caught a bit off guard, now fully understands. But Braden will not get the chance to break his record in the 440-yard dash. This year, all the events run will be in accordance to the metric standard. Angela continues, "Wow. That is impressive. I also hear, Officer Braden, that you once had to use your speed to chase someone down who broke into a locker room right here on campus." Braden responds, "Yeah. Three guys broke into the arena one night. When they got in, Todd McCrutchen and this other guy, Steve Leggett, tried to plant steroids in Mark Svoboda's locker to get Mark thrown off the track team. We caught Leggett, but McCrutchen and another guy made a run for it. I chased McCrutchen down and nailed his ass. He wasn't looking too good after that." Angela pauses for a second and stops the tape. Angela laughs and tells Braden, "Okay. I can't exactly put the word ass on the air. But that was really good, so I'm going to leave it. We'll just bleep it out later. The audience can fill in the bleeps." Braden replies, "Oh yeah. I forgot about that." On a subject she was requested to address by the campus police department, Angela then asks, "I heard they never caught the third person who broke in. Do you have any idea who that might have been? Knowing ahead of time how he was instructed by the police chief to answer the question, Braden replies, McCrutchen and Leggett both denied there was a third person. But they say blood is thicker than water. We think the third person was someone related to either McCrutchen or Leggett. Todd McCrutchen's brother, Scott, used to attend the university. And, as far as we can tell, no relative of Leggett has ever attended this university. Braden just let the world know that the police know exactly who the third person was. Angela then asks Braden, Todd McCrutchen, I understand, is no longer enrolled at our university. What happened to him? Braden explains, I heard he went to another university. He wasn't no good for our track team anyway. He ran really good during time trials, but when they put him on the track, he blew the race. According to the coach's records, we suspected he was rigging the races. Moving to the main part of the interview, Angela continues, wow. So, Todd McCrutchen is suspected of rigging the outcomes of the events. I can't believe that happened right here at our university. I also hear that someone else right here at the university was allegedly involved with rigging the races and involved in an organized gambling ring. Can you tell us who that was? Referring to his pre-prepared statement, Braden reveals that was Dean Grimsby. Dean Grimsby was allegedly the odds maker for the gambling ring. Dean Grimsby was arrested last year, at the end of the spring semester. So was Mr. Ruff, who was the coach at Centerville High School, and Mr. Parker, who was the coach at Henderson High School. They are all suspected to be involved in the same gambling ring. Angela pauses, then energetically summarizes, can you believe that, my listeners? Our own Dean of Students, Dean Addison Grimsby, was arrested for charges associated with an organized gambling ring. That is certainly not news you hear every day. Angela pauses again and announces, so, my listening audience, our Dean of Students, Dean Grimsby, has been arrested, and it is also my understanding that he is not likely returning to the university. Angela then asks Braden, Officer Braden, are any more arrests on the horizon? Braden replies with his prescripted response, I can't comment on that, since it's an ongoing investigation. But I can say this. We definitely have a couple of people under surveillance. And Provost Layton and Mr. Fraser aren't standing for any interference with the track team. Braden just hinted that more arrests may be coming. Braden also notified anyone potentially involved in a gambling ring that, if they do interfere with the track team, someone is coming after them. Already knowing the answer to her question, Angela asks, Officer Braden, can you tell us where Todd McCrutchen went to high school? Braden replies, McCrutchen went to Centerville High School, where Mr. Ruff was the coach. Angela then mentions, so, Mr. Ruff, the track coach at Centerville High School, got arrested for charges associated with gambling, and Todd McCrutchen, who was suspected of rigging the events, went to that high school. It's not hard to see the potential connection there. Officer Braden replies, we have strong evidence of the connection, Angela. I really want to hear them try to get out of this one. Braden is specifically referring to several years ago when Todd McCrutchen compromised his integrity by running in his brother's place for Centerville High School during the high school state invitational meet. Angela pauses the tape and tells Braden, let's take a break. And, by the way, you're doing really great. Angela, Braden, and Kathy talk for a while, discussing what will be brought up during the next segment. Kathy offers to Angela, if you want, I'll finish the interview for you. Angela looks at the clock and exclaims, sure. I'm late for class. It's not likely that Angela or Kathy will ever fall for each other's games again. But that will not stop either of them from trying. For the rest of the interview, Braden discusses with Angela other events surrounding the arrest of Dean Grimsby. Rehashing a bit of history, it is revealed how Dean Grimsby tried to expel Eddie. Braden also describes the events leading up to Dean Grimsby's arrest. Of special interest, Braden describes in detail how the undercover officers Mac, Bad Dog, and Mad Dog took Dean Grimsby away on the day he got arrested. And, as a final note, Angela announces to her listening audience that the new Dean of Students is Dr. James Beckman, who attended the university many years ago with Provost Layton. After the interview, Angela tells Kathy, "The commercial radio stations are going to really wonder how I got this story." Kathy replies, "I suppose they could have reported on it too, if they wanted." Angela explains, "They could. But the university is really quiet about stuff like this. Their public relations people only tell the news media what the university wants them to know. This is inside stuff." Kathy mentions, "They might be coming to you for information." Revealing what Kathy does not know, Angela explains, "The commercial stations look down on us because we're a college radio station, and we're run entirely by students. They are not getting anything out of me until they start acting a lot nicer." Kathy replies, "I can see that." Angela informs Braden and Kathy that the show will be aired sometime next week. Kathy asks Angela to let her know when the interview will be aired so that she can let the track team know. Angela's show, Waves, airs twice weekly. This episode is sure to be aired multiple times, since most of the students are unaware that Dean Grimsby has been arrested. Taking up Provost Layton on her offer to allow Todd McCutcheon to demonstrate his skill and proficiency on the track, Mr. Scott McCutcheon Sr., his son Jeff, and their attorney, Mr. Alexander Stupek, arrive one morning at practice. Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton have previously given the team the heads up that Jeff McCutcheon will attend a practice session with his father and attorney. Provost Layton has informed Mr. Stupek that, in no uncertain terms, Jeff will have to demonstrate his proficiency during the prescribed session. The team is ready to kick McCutcheon's ass at the event of Mr. Stupek's choosing. The problem is that no one knows which event or events will be placed on the table. But Mr. Fraser and the team are ready for whatever may come their way. The team is assembled on the bench, ready to practice. The team is well aware that Jeff McCutcheon, his father, and another unidentified person are sitting at the far end of the bleachers. For those who don't know, they will quickly find out the man in the plaid suit is Jeff McCutcheon's attorney. Mark throws out the question, "I wonder who's going to get to kick McCutcheon's ass today." Braden is quick to respond, "Anyone who wants to. He ain't no good at nothing." Mitchell comments, "McCutcheon thinks he's a distance runner. So, it's probably us distance guys." Braden boasts, then, "I'm gonna be a distance guy today." Eddie casually comments, "McCutcheon is bald, just like his brother. It must be genetic." Mark replies, "It must be stress. It's got to be." Eddie tells Mark, "Yeah, bro. You're stressing McCutcheon out." Mark laughs and replies, "So they say. But it looks more like another prickly sea spider bite to me." Braden asks, "Who's those two guys with him?" Recognizing Scott McCutcheon Sr., Mark replies, "One of the guys is his father, the Hammer. I'm not sure who the other guy is." Braden laughs and comments, "I didn't recognize McCutcheon's father. The last time I saw him, his ass was all busted up." Eddie comments, "That other guy must be his attorney. He's wearing a suit." Seeing McCutcheon's attorney wearing a plaid suit, Johnson comments, "That guy looks like he escaped from the circus." Mark sits back and announces to the tribe, "Today is going to be fun." Mr. Fraser walks in with Provost Layton, Dr. Bonomo, Kathy, and Paula. Placing the small lectern in front of the group, Mr. Fraser smiles, knowing that today might bring some interesting entertainment. Before Mr. Fraser even starts, Mr. Stupek walks up to Mr. Fraser and asks, "Are you Mr. George Fraser?" Mr. Fraser replies, "I am." "And you're interrupting my training session." Mr. Stupek informs Mr. Fraser, My name is Alexander Stupek. I represent Todd. Before Mr. Stupek can finish his sentence, Mr. Fraser firmly tells Mr. Stupek, "First, let's get something straight. I'm in charge of what goes on here, not you. Please take a seat, and I will address your concern in a few minutes. And, for the record, I don't care who you are." Mr. Stupek takes a seat, and is put on notice that he is in for a bumpy ride today. Mr. Fraser announces to the team, "Good morning. If any of the track athletes can throw the hammer, please see Dr. Bonomo sometime during the next week. Today, we're going to run a few time trials in individual events and in the relay events. We need to get the events fine-tuned before the divisional meet in January. And, as I mentioned last year, you have raised the bar. You can be sure that the other teams are not sitting on their asses. They plan to meet it." Mr. Fraser makes a few more announcements, then moves on to the day's main event. Mr. Fraser then yells out, "Stupek, you may now approach the lectern." Walking up to the lectern, Mr. Stupek now understands who is boss. The team already knows who is boss and is ready for some entertainment. Standing next to Mr. Fraser, Provost Layton cannot wait to see how the head coach she fought so hard for will handle McCutcheon and his attorney. Knowing that a confrontation will get the team's adrenaline levels up, Mr. Fraser asks Mr. Stupek, in 20 words or less, "Exactly what do you want?" Mr. Stupek informs Mr. Fraser, "I represent Jeff McCutcheon, whom I believe was unfairly cut from the team. Today, Jeff is here to demonstrate his proficiency to you." Mark yells out from the bleachers, "That was 23 words. Laughter comes from the team, suggesting to Mr. Stupek that he cannot even count. Once the laughter dies down, Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Stupek, "I know who you are and why you are here. So, let's get right down to business. In what event or events would Jeff care to demonstrate his proficiency today?" Mr. Stupek, who now knows better than to usurp Mr. Fraser's authority, replies, "Jeff is a distance runner. He would like to run the mile." Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Stupek, "Fair enough." Mr. Stupek boldly informs Mr. Fraser, "For your information, both Mr. McCutcheon and I will be timing Jeff." Claiming the upper hand, Mr. Fraser smiles and replies, "Go ahead. Be my guest. Time anyone you want. I don't care. You can even use a metric stopwatch if you want." Mr. Stupek is quite flustered by Mr. Fraser's confidence level and Mr. Fraser's total lack of fear. And it's now no secret that the concept of the bogus metric stopwatch has made its way all the way to Mr. Fraser. Addressing his team, Mr. Fraser smiles and yells out, "Who wants to kick McCrutchen's ass in the mile?" A sudden look of shock comes over Mr. Stupek and Mr. McCutcheon. Mitchell, Akinmola, Stone, Braden, Mark, and Eddie all yell out, "Me." Mr. Fraser tells McCutcheon's challengers, "Get out there and start warming up." The challengers quickly get off the bleachers and head out to the track. Mr. Fraser tells the rest of his team, "We are all going to watch this race, and it's going to be a good one. Then, we will run a few events for time. And tomorrow, we'll hit the sand track and run the interval drill." On the way to the track, Mr. Fraser further reviews the runner's performance statistics. Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, "Jeff doesn't stand a chance against those guys." Mr. Fraser replies, "I know. But I'm going to make this interesting. I think we'll see some good times from our guys today." Provost Layton strongly suspects Mr. Fraser has something up his sleeve. Calling Mitchell, Akinmola, Stone, Braden, Mark, Eddie, and the timekeepers aside, Mr. Fraser carefully explains today's race strategy. Walking over to inconsiderately interrupt Mr. Fraser's meeting, Mr. Stupek is strategically intercepted by Provost Layton. Keeping Mr. Stupek at a distance, Provost Layton asks, "May I help you, sir?" Mr. Stupek asks, "What's going on over there? What's going on is none of Mr. Stupek's business, but Provost Layton kindly informs him they are likely discussing the race strategy and other things coaches talk with their athletes about right before a race. I'm sure you're quite familiar with what a coach discusses before a race. Pointing out one of McCutcheon's deficiencies, Provost Layton asks Mr. Stupek, Jeff is about to run a mile. Isn't he going to warm up? Mr. Stupek yells out to McCutcheon, Hey, Jeff. Warm up. At the starting line, Mr. Fraser announces, This is a 1 mile run. You are all expected to run your best race today. Jeff McCutcheon. When the gun is fired, you are to run and deliver the best performance you can. Do not pay attention to what anyone else is doing. And do not pay attention to a second gun that may go off during the race. Am I understood? McCutcheon replies, Yeah. Mr. Fraser then announces, McCutcheon. Take the inside lane. For this race, Mr. Fraser even gives McCutcheon the choice lane. The starter announces, Set. McCutcheon gets set, ready to demonstrate to the world why he should be reinstated to the team. The gun is fired, and three stopwatches are started to document McCutcheon's time. Right off the line, McCutcheon quickly takes the lead. McCutcheon, however, is only in the lead because Mitchell, Akinmola, Stone, Braden, Mark, and Eddie remain standing at the starting line. Mark comments, Wow. Look at him go. Eddie replies, It looks like he's winning. Braden adds, That don't matter none. He's still gonna get his ass kicked. And Braden will make sure of it. As McCutcheon rounds the track, Provost Layton laughs and asks Mr. Fraser, George, now what are you up to? Having to deal with Mr. Stupek earlier, Provost Layton missed hearing one important detail of Mr. Fraser's race strategy. Mr. Fraser laughs and explains, when McCutcheon finishes his first quarter mile, our guys will begin the race. If I am correct, they will all beat McCutcheon to the finish line. Provost Layton concludes, So, you think McCutcheon will lose the race, even with a quarter-mile head start? Mr. Fraser replies, Exactly. Provost Layton laughs, knowing that, under this arrangement, the guys will run an excellent race. As McCutcheon is on the back straightaway, Mr. Stupek yells out to Mr. Fraser, What's going on here? Mr. Fraser boldly replies, They are running a mile. It looks like your guy is winning. Pointing to the six runners on the track, who have barely moved 1 inch, Mr. Stupek exclaims, They are not running. They are just standing there. Mr. Fraser looks over at his six runners, and sounding a bit like Mark or Mr. Zunday, replies, Oh, yeah. I can see that now. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. With McCutcheon approaching the starting line from 100 yards away, Mr. Fraser asks the six runners, Are you guys ready? Braden exclaims, Bring it on. Let's get this as kicking in high gear. The guys line up, leaving lane one open for McCutcheon to pass. The starter announces, Set. As McCutcheon completes his first quarter mile, the gun is fired. With 440 yards to make up, Mitchell, Akinmola, Stone, Braden, Mark, and Eddie are not playing games. They know they have a lot of work to do. The group of six runners quickly passes McCutcheon, with Stone leading the pack. Mr. Fraser, along with Provost Layton, Kathy, and Paula, watch as the guys try to pull this off. Curious whether Mr. Fraser is correct, Provost Layton asks Kathy, I'm curious. How do you see this ending? Also wanting to hear the answer, Mr. Fraser listens as Kathy explains to Provost Layton, technically, it's going to be a close race. If the guys run anywhere near a 4-minute mile, they'll be able to beat McCutcheon. But, practically speaking, they'll all kick his ass. None of these guys will let McCutcheon win. Mr. McCutcheon, a former track athlete himself, watches as his son continually loses ground to the competition. Now knowing exactly what is going on, Mr. McCutcheon does not like it. But there is nothing that he can say. To Mr. McCutcheon and Mr. Stupak, time goes by very slowly, as Jeff slowly gets hammered on the track. McCutcheon enters his fourth and final lap. On his third lap, Stone, leading the pack, has already left the back straightaway and far into the curve. The pack closely follows Stone. Kathy tells Provost Layton, okay. So, now there is no way McCutcheon is going to win. Provost Layton tells Kathy, please explain. Looking at one of her stopwatches, Kathy explains, the guys are running a 60-second quarter-mile pace, which every one of them can sustain for the entire final lap. McCutcheon is, at best, running an 80-second pace. The way things look right now, the guys are expected to beat him by at least 5 seconds. On their final lap, the guys have not one, but two goals. The first goal is to beat McCutcheon. The second goal, among themselves, is to win the race. On the back straightaway, the pack closes in on McCutcheon. Mitchell passes Stone, and Braden steps out and passes Mitchell. Braden breaks from the pack, but Eddie will have nothing to do with it. In the final curve, Eddie passes Stone, but has a problem passing Mitchell. Coming out of the final curve, the runners pass McCutcheon one by one. In a sprint to the finish, Braden takes first place, Eddie takes second place, and Mitchell takes third place. Akinmola, Stone, and Mark all finish within a second of each other. 8 seconds later, McCutcheon crosses the finish line. Realizing what just happened, Mr. McCutcheon exclaims, "That wasn't very nice, embarrassing Jeff like that. What's wrong with you people?" Mr. Fraser replies, "I'm not finished embarrassing him yet." Mr. Fraser then asks Mrs. Owens, "What's on the clock? What do we got?" Mrs. Owens, who has gotten much quicker at compiling the results, hands Mr. Fraser the run sheet. Mr. Fraser exclaims, "Braden, Eddie, Mitchell, Akinmola, Stone, and Mark all broke 4 minutes. Can you believe it?" Focusing his attention to Mr. McCutcheon and Mr. Stupak, Mr. Fraser exclaims, "Jeff McCutcheon ran the mile in 5 minutes and 26 seconds. I gave him a quarter-mile head start. And he still couldn't win. That is exactly why he is not on the team. Do you finally get it? That is exactly why he was cut." Mr. Fraser then announces the times of the other runners. Again, focusing his attention to Mr. McCutcheon and Mr. Stupak, Mr. Fraser continues, exclaiming, "I cut him to avoid the embarrassment of a performance like that in a meet. That kind of performance will embarrass him, our coaching staff, and this whole team. How am I going to put him in if that's the best he can deliver? Someone, please answer me." Avoiding the question, Mr. Stupak stupidly asks, "Have you tried him out in a sprint?" Mr. Fraser throws his hands in the air and yells out, "Karen, Erica, Tessa, Amanda, Michelle, Leslie, and Dagmar, warm up for a 100-meter dash." Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Stupak, "Go ahead and get your guy ready." Braden adds, "Yeah. Tell McCutcheon to get his flimsy ass ready for his next ass kicking." Trying to negotiate a recovery period for Jeff McCutcheon, Mr. Stupak exclaims, "He just ran a mile. He'll need a recovery period." Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Stupak, "Fine, then. Tell me when he's ready. In the meantime, we'll run a few other time trials." Mr. Stupak and Mr. McCutcheon step aside and have a private discussion. It's anybody's guess what they may be talking about. But Mr. Fraser does not care. Already proving his point, Mr. Fraser moves on to the team's workout. A half hour later, Mr. Stupak tells Mr. Fraser, "We're ready to have Jeff run again." Mr. Fraser blows his whistle and yells out, "Karen, Erica, Tessa, Amanda, Michelle, Leslie, and Dagmar, get behind the blocks." The women walk toward the starting line, leaving Mr. Stupak and Mr. McCutcheon wondering why Mr. Fraser put Jeff McCutcheon up against seven women. The timekeepers immediately stop what they are doing and head to the finish line. As McCutcheon heads over to the starting line, Mr. Stupek asks Mr. McCutcheon, "What's a good time in the 100-meter dash?" Mr. McCutcheon replies, "I don't really know. I'm used to the events being measured in yards." Overhearing the question, Mr. Fraser informs Mr. Stupek, "Four men, in the 10 to 11 second range. Four women, in the 11 to 12 second range." Mr. McCutcheon confidently assures Mr. Stupek, "Jeff should be able to do that." McCutcheon is granted the privilege of running in the highly esteemed lane 4 and gets behind the blocks along with the women. The starter announces, "On your marks." Once the runners appear to be ready, the starter announces, "Set." The runners get set, and the gun is fired. 10 meters into the race, Karen takes the lead, with Erika and Tessa not far behind her. Dagmar, a distance athlete, is surprisingly in fourth place. At 50 meters, Karen retains the lead, but Erika and Tessa are pushing her hard. As the runners approach the finish line, Karen takes first place, Erika takes second place, and Tessa takes third place. Dagmar, finishing right behind Tessa, is today's big surprise. Last place goes to McCutcheon, who is again sorely disappointed in his own performance. Waiting patiently for the times to be compiled, Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, "These women are fast. Did you see that?" Provost Layton replies, "George, it looks like we're going to sweep the 60-meter and the 100-meter dash this year." Mr. Fraser adds, "And from what I see, add to that the 200-meter dash and the 4x100-meter relay." Mrs. Owens hands Mr. Fraser the run sheet, who looks it over with Provost Layton. Provost Layton whispers to Mr. Fraser, "That was a really great run. And Dagmar really surprised me." Mr. Fraser then boldly announces, "The winning time in this event was 11.4 seconds. Jeff McCutcheon ran 100 meters in 14.1 seconds. Figuring a 14.1 second 100 meter dash is roughly equivalent to a 12.5 second 100 yard dash," Mark exclaims, "Wow. I ran faster than that in fourth grade." Not at all appreciative of how the day is going, Mr. Stupek tells Mr. Fraser, "I'm kind of appalled about how you are handling this, coach." Reviewing McCutcheon's statistics on his clipboard, Mr. Fraser frankly replies, "What do you want me to do? Jeff ran the 400-meter dash in 65.8 seconds, the mile in 5:23.3, and the 60-meter dash in 8.4 seconds. And now, add to that 14.1 seconds in the 100-meter dash. He gets his ass kicked every time he gets on the track. So, please tell me which one of those times qualifies him to be on this team." Knowing that McCutcheon ran poorly today, neither Mr. McCutcheon nor Mr. Stupek dare to answer Mr. Fraser. Breaking the silence, Provost Layton answers, "None of them. So, I would like to thank you, Mr. Stupek, Mr. McCutcheon, and Jeff for coming out today. But, unfortunately, Mr. Fraser's original assessment of Todd McCutcheon's qualifications and abilities still stands, and Jeff is cut from the team. If any of you have any further complaint, please contact me in writing. But I can assure you, neither I nor Mr. Fraser will be addressing any more nonsense of this type. And if you do decide to raise this issue again, please be aware that, if we do choose to address it, any complaint will be handled in the same manner that it was here today. And in the future, please don't entertain me with nonsense such as how Todd was treated unfairly. Performance on the track is the issue, and I might add, the only issue." Hearing Provost Layton give McCutcheon the boot, Braden comments under his breath, "McCutcheon's getting his ass kicked worse than Mr. Crum is right now." Braden, however, still fired up from the race, is heard by all those standing around. Not hearing the former high school principal's name for quite some time, Braden immediately gets Mr. Fraser's attention. Braden also inadvertently gets the attention of Mr. McCutcheon, who, like Mr. Crum, was involved with the organized gambling ring that was busted wide open by Officer Hayes. Now curious, Mr. Fraser asks Braden, how is Mr. Crumb getting his ass kicked now? He's in jail. Mr. McCutcheon, wanting to hear the answer because his future fate may also involve being behind bars, hangs around to hear Braden's answer. Braden explains, in a prison, there's a pecking order. And nobody's crossing up the pecking order and getting away with it. When they put his ass in prison, the first thing Mr. Crumb did is to try to tell the other inmates that he runs the place now. They ripped him a hole in a place where there ain't supposed to be one. Someone kicks Mr. Crumb's fat ass in there every day. Mr. McCutcheon brazenly asks Braden, how do you know all this? Braden exclaims, because my father is the prison warden. I know what goes on in there. And if you're gonna keep fixing races, that's where your ass is gonna end up someday. Mr. McCutcheon yells out, I'm not fixing any races. Braden replies, yeah, Junior. You just keep telling yourself that. Where did I hear that shit before? Not wanting his client to get more upset than he already is, Mr. Stupek tells Mr. McCutcheon, come on, Scott. Let's get out of here. We're done here for now. Mr. Stupek, Mr. McCutcheon, and Jeff McCutcheon leave the track and head back to their cars. Finally understanding that his son is nowhere near being qualified to run on the university's team, Mr. McCutcheon suggests to Jeff that he apply to another college if he wants to run track. Mr. Stupek informs Mr. McCutcheon that the team's caliber is far beyond what he ever thought, and there is nothing further that he can do. The good news is that Mr. Fraser has hopefully gotten rid of Jeff McCutcheon for good. The bad news is that Mr. McCutcheon has heard firsthand of Mr. Crumb's less than lavish life in prison. Moving day arrives for Officer Richard Hayes, and much of the tribe descends upon the officer's house at 8 o'clock in the morning. Mark and Paula arrive with Mark's truck and a trailer. Eddie and Kathy take Eddie's dune buggy, also towing a trailer. Richard has rented a truck, which will carry most of the household items and furniture. Richard's wife, Sandy, comes out to greet the moving crew, telling them, it's so nice of you guys to help us. I've heard so much about you guys over the years. It's so good to finally meet you. Everyone introduces themselves, giving Sandy a face to go with the names she's heard about for years. Sandy then tells the crew, and we're taking all of you for pizza for lunch. Everyone appreciates getting pizza, which is the standard fare whenever anyone moves. Eddie asks Richard, so, what do we got? Richard suggests furniture, boxes, and lawn equipment. From the looks of things, we can put the furniture in the truck, the boxes on one trailer, and the lawn and outside stuff on the other trailer. Eddie replies, got it, with the rest of the tribe echoing the sentiment. The tribe gets to work, loading the trucks and trailers. Wendy directs the traffic, making sure there is no collision at the front door. After an hour, Eddie takes a short break and explains to Richard how Mr. McCutcheon brought his father and attorney to a practice session a few weeks ago. Hearing Eddie's description of what went on, Richard mentions, that's not good news. These guys seem to stop at nothing to get these McCutcheon characters on a track team. The only thing that I can think of is they are back to their same old games. Eddie agrees, telling Richard, I can see that. Richard explains to Eddie, let me tell you something. To some people, money is like heroin. When the supply runs out, they'll do anything for another fix. I'll have to keep an eye out and see where these characters go next. During their discussion, Eddie and Richard take a walk to the backyard, making sure nothing was missed. Richard tells Eddie, here's another thing I've seen over the years. Whenever there is a controversy or conflict, the many views can be always reduced down to one issue. The issue is money. Follow the money trail, and you'll eventually find your answers. Someone might argue that the issue is not money, but power. But you have to remember this. Power paves the way to money. So, we're back to money again. Eddie replies, so, if they want McCrutchen on the team that badly, some money must be at stake. Richard replies, exactly. Eddie tells Richard, if I hear anything more, I'll definitely let you know. By mid-morning, the truck is loaded, and the trailers are full. The crew makes the 2-mile trip to Alicia Drive, where they will unload everything. When they arrive, Braden tells Sandy, just tell us where you want everything, and we'll put it there. The first order of business is to get the baby's room set up, which they intentionally loaded onto the truck last. Then, the baby can be put down for a nap while everything else is being unloaded. While they are unloading the truck, Wendy mentions to Braden, this house is really nice. Maybe someday we can get something like this. Braden replies, we'd better start looking. There's not much for sale around here. Wendy asks, can we afford a place like this? Braden confidently replies, yeah. Braden, who has no expenses other than food, gas for his June buggy, and dates with Wendy, has been investing nearly his entire salary, following Eddie's stock market advice. Shortly after noon, everything is unloaded and set into the house, perhaps setting a record for the fastest move in history. But fast is the name of the game for the tribe. The group then washes up and gets ready to go out and get pizza with the Hayes family. Most excited about getting pizza are Richard's 2 older kids, who were asking all morning, is it time to get pizza yet? With the move completed, everyone heads to the pizzeria for a well-deserved lunch. Working the third shift very early one Saturday morning, while on patrol, Officer Braden hears on his radio, radio to 365. Officer Braden replies, 365. Go ahead. The dispatcher responds, silent 1046, back service door, at the arena, 2 minutes ago. Officer Braden replies, 365 1017. Officer Braden then heads to the arena, wondering who is breaking into the indoor arena at 4 o'clock in the morning and why. Arriving at the scene, Officer Braden parks in the main parking lot in front of the arena and walks around to the back service door, which he sees is closed. Officer Braden jumps up and grabs onto the brick ledge and, pulling himself up, takes a look through the window. Officer Braden sees a light on, which should be off, and an open door to one of the offices overlooking the arena. Officer Braden radios the dispatcher, informing them that there is, in fact, a break-in. The dispatcher relays to Officer Braden that Officer Levi is on his way and to meet him on TAC 1. On tactical channel number 1, Officer Braden broadcasts, 365 to 412. Officer Levi replies, 412. Go ahead. Officer Braden tells Officer Levi, we have lights on and an open door to one of the offices overlooking the indoor track. How far out are you? Officer Levi replies, I just pulled into the parking lot. I'll be there in less than a minute. Officer Braden replies, I'm at the service entrance. I'll wait. Officer Braden, pulling himself up on the ledge one more time, takes another peek through the window, seeing that nothing has changed. Officer Levi arrives, and Officer Braden informs him they are still in there. There's no forced entry, so they either have a key or they pick the lock. Officer Levi asks, do you know what's in that office? Officer Braden replies, that's the coach's records room. That's where they keep the performance records for the university's athletes and performance records for the other teams in the division. And there's some other equipment in there, like about 3 dozen stopwatches, whistles, the batants, and the shot puts. There's probably more stuff in there, but that's all I know of. Officer Levi asks, is there another way out of that office? Officer Braden replies, no. Officer Levi replies, good. That will make this easy. Officer Levi tells Officer Braden, let's go in and see what we got. Officer Braden quietly opens the service door, and the 2 officers get down low, quickly and quietly moving over toward the opened office door. As officers Braden and Levi approach the office, they hear talking and the shuffling of papers going on in the room. As officers Braden and Levi get closer to the office, they hear one of the perpetrators say to the other, "I think we got it all." The other perpetrator replies, "Double check it, just to make sure." Hearing what was said, Officer Levi signals to Officer Braden to move in. Officers Braden and Levi rush through the door, entering the room. Suddenly turning around, the two perpetrators, realizing they have no other escape route, run to try to escape through the door. Officer Braden quickly blocks the exit, as Officer Levi quickly places one of the perpetrators in handcuffs. Officer Braden, placing the other perpetrator in an arm lock, exclaims, "What's your ass doing in this office?" The perpetrator yells out, "Let me go." Tightening the arm lock, Officer Braden replies, "Yeah, right. That ain't happening." Officer Levi asks Officer Braden, "Do you recognize these guys?" Officer Braden replies, "Yeah. This one is Todd McCrutchen, and the one you cuffed is his sorry-ass brother, Jeff McCrutchen." Braden then asks the McCrutchen brothers, "What are your asses doing in this office at 4 o'clock in the morning?" Todd McCrutchen again yells out, "Let me go." Braden tells McCrutchen, "Shut up and answer my question." Todd McCrutchen yells out louder, "Let me go. You're hurting me." Braden cuffs McCrutchen and asks again, "Now, what are you doing in this office at 4 o'clock in the morning?" Todd McCrutchen, who now goes to another university, starts yelling out, "What Mark took away, we're trying to get home. Don't you see them, trying to get home?" Braden exclaims, "What are you talking about, Junior?" Todd McCrutchen yells out again, "What Mark took away, we're trying to get home." Turning to his brother, Todd yells to Jeff, "Tell them about it." Not making any sense of what Todd McCrutchen is saying, Officer Levi tells Officer Braden, "He must be on some sort of drugs. He's not making any sense." Officer Braden replies, "His dumb shit ass never did make no sense anyway." With the McCrutchen brothers now restrained, Officer Braden observes that the drawers to one of the filing cabinets are opened. Examining the contents of a box sitting on the table, Officer Braden finds a slew of stopwatches, the most recent performance records for the university's team, and the performance records for the other teams in the division from last year. Officer Braden tells Officer Levi, "From what I see, these guys are stealing the performance records for our track team and the records from last year's meets. And the stopwatches look like the pay dirt." Officer Braden asks the McCrutchen brothers, "I'm going to ask you guys one more time. What are you guys doing in this office at 4 o'clock in the morning?" Todd McCrutchen exclaims, "What Mark took away, we're trying to get home." Jeff tells his brother, "Shut up already. You're going to get us in trouble." Officer Braden raises his voice and tells Jeff, "Junior, your ass is already in trouble." Officer Braden then tells Officer Levi, "It looks like they're spending the rest of their weekend in the tank." Officer Levi replies, "Maybe we'll get something out of them in the morning when the drugs get out of their system." Officer Braden and Officer Levi place Todd and Jeff McCrutchen under arrest and read them their rights. The McCrutchen brothers are charged with breaking and entering and are escorted outside to Officer Braden's police car. Officer Levi returns to the scene and places crime scene tape over the entrance to the office. Heading back to the station, Officer Levi will help Officer Braden sort out the details of the break-in. When Todd McCrutchen is booked, he is forced to empty his pockets. Among Todd McCutcheon's possessions, Officer Braden found a few pills in a small plastic bag, lock-picking tools, a switchblade, and a piece of paper with a phone number on it. Among the items found in Jeff McCutcheon's pockets is a list of the items that were found in the box on the table. Further analysis reveals that the piece of paper found in Jeff's pocket was torn from the piece of paper found in Todd's pocket. And the handwriting on both pieces of paper appears to be the same. Monday, at practice, it is clearly evident to all the athletes and timekeepers that crime scene tape has been placed over the coach's record room. The tribe moves to the end of the bleachers, where Braden explains to the tribe what went down over the weekend. Braden also tells the tribe that Chief Toledo will be explaining what happened to the team at the end of practice today, and that Officer Hayes also plans to be there. After giving his rundown, Braden mentions, "It was really weird. McCrutchen was yelling out, 'What Mark took away, we're trying to get home. Don't you see them, trying to get home? I couldn't make no sense out of him.'" Eddie tells Braden, "We can make some sense out of this. The first thing I see is that Mark took something away." Johnson mentions, "Whatever Mark took away, it must have been really valuable, since they are trying to get it home." Adding to the conversation, Erica observes, "Mark must be really strong, since there are multiple people trying to get it home, whatever it is." Johnson points out, "They are crying out for sympathy, because he said, 'Don't you see them trying to get home?'" Karen adds, "Whatever Mark took away was taken from the home, because they are trying to get it back home again." Mark, himself, suggests, "Whoever they are, they haven't gotten it home yet. And they are trying very hard." Bobby B. then suggests, "Maybe Mark took people out of the home, since he was saying, 'Don't you see them, trying to get home?'" Eddie then tells Braden, "See that, bro? It's beginning to make a lot more sense now." Braden laughs and replies, "It still don't make no sense to me." Mark adds, "McCrutchen never made any sense anyway." Braden laughs and replies, "That's what I told Officer Levi." Mr. Fraser, Provost Layton, Dr. Bonamo, Kathy, and Paula walk into the arena. Mr. Fraser begins today by announcing, "Good morning. As you can see, there has been another break-in over the weekend. To squelch any rumors, Chief Toledo will provide you with information regarding what occurred here over the weekend at the end of today's practice session. Many of the team members wonder why someone would even break into the arena. They will have to wait until the end of practice to find out." Mr. Fraser then makes a few announcements, and the team begins practice. At the end of the practice session, Mr. Fraser blows his whistle and instructs the athletes to have a seat on the bleachers. Chief Toledo walks into the arena, accompanied by Officer Richard Hayes. Now strongly suspecting that there is still an active gambling ring in the area, Officer Hayes has chosen to be present today. And, hearing the name McCutchen come up once again certainly raised his interest. Chief Toledo begins, telling the athletes, "First of all, I apologize for cutting your training session a little short today, but your coaches wanted you to have an explanation of what occurred in the arena over the weekend. I'll be brief. Two former members of this track team have been arrested for breaking and entering into the arena this past weekend. They have been transferred to the county jail and are currently under investigation. What they were attempting to steal were the performance records of every one of you, and the performance records for the other teams in the division over the past year. They were also attempting to steal a good number of stopwatches, but we believe that is not what they were originally after." The team members are surprised at hearing the announcement, wondering who it was that had broken in. After revealing a few more details, and asking anyone who has any information to contact him, Chief Toledo concludes by telling everyone, "Thank you for your time, and I will now turn the floor over to Mr. Fraser." Previously hearing from Mr. Fraser that he suspects he knows why the break-in occurred, Chief Toledo stays around, wanting to hear Mr. Fraser's take on the events that occurred. So does Officer Hayes. Never missing an opportunity to give the team a pep talk, Mr. Fraser takes the floor, announcing to the team, "Good morning, again. As Chief Toledo mentioned, the thieves were after your performance records, and the records we've kept from last year's meets." Mr. Fraser raises his voice and asks, "Do you know why they were after your performance records?" The team is silent, waiting for Mr. Fraser's explanation. Mr. Fraser exclaims, One reason they want your performance records is because they have no idea how to beat this team. Last year, at the divisional meet, our team took all the gold medals. And we have the potential to do that again next month when we come back from Christmas break. They have no idea how to stop you. They were after your performance statistics. That means they'll know who to put up in a race to beat you. Mr. Fraser then laughs and tells the team it wouldn't take them too long to figure out that they don't have anyone who can beat you. Mr. Fraser continues and explains, "Now, listen to this. Dean Grimsby and a few others were arrested for running an organized gambling ring. While I don't have direct evidence of this, I strongly suspect that we have not seen the end of organized gambling affecting our sport." Mr. Fraser then raises his voice and exclaims, "If someone has all of our performance statistics, they will know exactly who will win each event. They'll not only know who will win each event, but they'll also know what the winning time will be. If they have that information, someone stands to make a lot of money. All of that information is contained in the records they attempted to steal." Officer Hayes, listening to Mr. Fraser's analysis, is highly convinced that the coach is spot on. Mr. Fraser then instructs the team, "If any of you are aware of any information about gambling within our sport, please bring it to my, Provost Layton's, or Dr. Bonamo's attention. And if anyone approaches you to fix a race, you'd better bring it to my attention. If you get caught fixing a race, your track career is over. And I will be the one making sure your track career is over. No one will ever trust you to run again." The team claps and cheers after listening to Mr. Fraser's address, signifying that they do not want to compete in a rigged sport. A few more announcements are made, then the student athletes hit the locker rooms. Right before the end of the semester, at the recommendation of Mr. Zunday, Kathy and Paula drive over to the administration building in the school district in which they grew up. Planning to apply for positions as physical education instructors, they hope that something will come through by the time they graduate. On the way, Paula asks Kathy, "Do you think anything will come up?" Kathy replies, "I hope so. Mr. Zunday sounded pretty confident. And I really can't imagine doing anything else." Paula comically suggests, "Maybe I can apply to be the principal at the high school." Kathy laughs and replies, "That would be funny. Then, you can hobble out to the track and tell Barbara that she can't hold track practice in the fall because track is not a fall sport." Paula exclaims, "Stop it, girl. If I were the principal, I'd be out there helping Barbara coach track." Kathy then recalls from her high school days, "You know, if you look around the high school, the only people who are happy are the gym teachers, and the teachers who don't really need their jobs, like Miss Amherst, Miss Starr, and Mr. Malik. And if you look around society, most people aren't really happy with their jobs." Paula replies, "Yeah, I can see that." Kathy further observes, "Even Richard has been a lot less stressed since Eddie has been giving him stock tips. The same with Angelo. Now that they really don't need their jobs, they are a lot more relaxed." Kathy drives into the parking lot of the administration building, which is located on a corner of the same tract of land where the high school sits. Paula comments, "If it weren't for those trees, they'd have a great view of the high school track from the administration building. And from where I'm sitting, they had a great view of where the Chucky used to smoke pot." Kathy asks, "How did they not even see that?" Paula replies, "They probably did, and called Mr. Crum. And Mr. Crum did absolutely nothing about it because he was the school drug dealer." Kathy exclaims, "You're right. I can't imagine what Mr. Crum told them." Imitating Mr. Crum, Paula replies, "Yeah. I'll take care of it. I'll call their parents right away." As they are walking to the administration building, Kathy tells Paula, "If I were back in high school again, I wouldn't give a crap about half the stuff I had to put up with, like that old Crum." Paula laughs and exclaims, "It's not like you gave a crap about him anyway, girl. Like, Remember that cut-off shirt thing when we were seniors? Kathy laughs and replies, okay. You're right. So, I guess I didn't give a crap about a lot of stuff in high school. Paula tells Kathy, remember that when you start teaching. Kathy and Paula head inside, hopefully landing jobs as physical education teachers someday.